But I do want to talk about mothers and the influence of mothers. And one of the greatest examples of motherhood that we find in Scripture. Abraham Lincoln only knew his mother for the first 9 years of his life. She died when he was only 9, and yet he said, "All that I am or hope to be, I owe to my mother." Billy Graham said, "Of all the people I've ever known, my mother has had the greatest influence on me." And Martin Luther King Jr. told of the time that his mother set her young son down and talked about discrimination and segregation. He said, "She taught me that I should feel like I'm somebody. But on the other hand, she explained to me a system that stared me in the face every day saying, 'You are less than, you are not equal to.' She told me about slavery. She talked to me about the Civil War. She tried to explain the divided system of the South, the segregated schools, the restaurants, the theaters, the white and colored signs on drinking fountains and restrooms as a social condition rather than a natural order. She made it clear that she opposed this system, and she said, 'I must never allow it to make me feel inferior.'" And Martin Luther King said his mother looked at him and said, "Remember this, you are as good as anyone." And she didn't realize that her son, the little boy in her arms, would years later be involved in the struggle against the system that she was speaking of. Mothers have a profound influence on us as individuals and on our society. And when we open the pages of Holy Scripture, we find the example of so many wonderful mothers. We could talk about Sarah, the mother of Isaac, Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau, Jochebed, the mother of Moses. Remember how she made the little basket and put him in the Nile? We could talk about Hannah, the mother of Samuel. And by the way, you know we have a granddaughter, Hannah, who's here, and a grandson, Samuel, who's here today. We could talk about Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, and of course Mary, the mother of Jesus. But I want to talk about an unsung hero. Paul, I've been thinking about this summer, about the summer sermon series. Paul just puts me to shame the way he plans ahead. He gave me the anthems the other day all the way through September of 2018. No, all the way through September. And I said, "Goodness, I better get busy." So I've been thinking about maybe doing a sermon series on the unsung heroes of the Bible. And one of the greatest unsung heroes is mentioned only once in Scripture. But her influence in the ministry of Jesus, in the early church, the mission to the Gentiles, the ministry of the Apostle Paul, and the written Gospels, and the proclamation of the Gospels to future generations is profound. Now you will recognize her son's name. You will recognize the name of her nephew. But if I ask you, who was the aunt of Barnabas? Who was the mother of John Mark? Not many will know that her name was Mary, just like the mother of Jesus. And she had a most significant role and an influential role in the ministry of Jesus and in the early days of the church, and it all revolved around her home in Jerusalem that was truly a home of grace. Even though her name is only mentioned one time in Scripture, the sphere of Mary's influence is so great that I don't think we can even begin to measure how great it truly is. We find the only reference to Mary in the book of Acts. It's in the 12th chapter of the story of the early church as recorded by Dr. Luke, Acts chapter 12. Now, the beginning of that chapter tells us that the persecution against Christianity had just started in Jerusalem. In fact, Herod, who was the king, he not only arrested James, the brother of John, one of the 12 disciples, but he executed James the apostle. And so James, the brother of John, becomes the first martyr of the church. He is the first one to be executed for his faith among the disciples. And then he received such good feedback on this from those who opposed Christianity that he also arrested Simon Peter, the leader of the disciples, the head of the early church. And so Simon Peter was in prison in Jerusalem, and it was Herod's intention to put him to death as well. But then an amazing thing happened. There was a strong group of believers. At this time, they were not even called Christians. They were the followers of Jesus, his disciples, the people of the way. And they gathered at this big house in Jerusalem. It was a spacious home. It was a home that had an upper room, a large upper room, where a lot of Christians could gather. And we read about it in the 12th chapter of Acts, beginning in the 12th verse. There were a large group of believers who had gathered, and they were praying that Peter would be delivered. Now, while they were praying, something amazing was taking place. Because if you read the 12th chapter of Acts, you read how an angel came and delivered Peter from prison. And so now suddenly Simon Peter has been released from prison, and he finds himself outside the jail. Where will he go? Well, there was only one place. There was one place he knew he could go where he could find security, where he could find help, where he could find fellow believers. And we find it was the house of Mary. Luke writes, the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose other name was Mark. So he goes to the house, and then in one of the more comical things that happens in Scripture, he knocks at the door. And there is a maid named Rhoda who comes to the door, and she looks through the peephole, and guess who she sees? There's Simon Peter. There's the guy they're praying will be released. You know what she does? She shuts the door. She thinks it is a ghost. She goes in and says, too late. Just saw his ghost out there. He's gone. Meanwhile, he's knocking at the door. And Simon Peter comes in. Their prayers have been answered. This story tells us two or three things about Mary. Number one, it tells us that she had the gift of hospitality. Of all the places in Jerusalem where the believers would gather, they would go to the home of Mary. A lot of you remember back in the day when churches had these grand revivals. If you grew up Baptist, you know all about revival meetings, don't you? Now, when I was a kid growing up, the three biggest, most impressive meals that we had at our house would be Thanksgiving, Christmas, and revival. Because when you had a visiting preacher who would come in, it was a really big deal to invite the preacher and the visiting preacher and the song leader, and everybody else would come to your house to eat. They would feed these preachers these incredible meals. I never saw any small evangelist. Because every night they would go and people would bring out their best china. And they would cook a meal, a type of meal you would have at Thanksgiving or Christmas. That's the gift of hospitality. Whenever we had visiting missionaries who would come to our church, they would always stay with my grandmother. My grandmother had the gift of hospitality. She was always entertaining, always having WMU groups, always having the visiting ministers over for meals. Mary had the gift of hospitality. Another thing we see is she was also very generous. Now, the fact that she had a maid, the fact that she had a large home, tells us that she was a woman of financial means. But she was obviously very generous. She was willing to give. She was willing to share. But it also tells us something else. She was courageous. Because the persecution had just started against the church. It was dangerous for Christians, for believers, to let their presence known. But that did not deter her. She was courageous in her faith. Now, this is when we need to put our detective hat on, and we need to see the influence of Mary, not only at this place, but at other places as well. There was another time when it was dangerous to be a believer in Jerusalem. It was the week of Passover. It was Jesus' last week before his crucifixion. And if you go to the 12th chapter of Mark, the book that was written by her son, he goes into great detail in the 13th chapter of Mark, talking about, actually the 14th chapter of Mark, telling about how the disciples, on a secret mission, went into Jerusalem to find a house, a spacious home, where they could meet for this Last Supper. The Bible never tells us whose house this was, but it makes sense that if Mary's home was where the believers were meeting in the book of Acts, then it was also Mary's house where they met for the Last Supper. And this tells us the influence that Mary had, the networking that she knew, that she was friends of Jesus, that she was friends of all of the disciples. If we go back to the 12th chapter of Acts, after the persecution, when you go into the 13th chapter of Acts, the Apostle Paul and Barnabas, if you go back to the last verse of the 11th chapter, we know that they were in Jerusalem. They no doubt, Barnabas and Paul were no doubt there in Mary's house as they were praying for Simon Peter. They decided to leave and to go on the first missionary journey. It's recorded in Acts chapter 13. You know who went on that journey? The Apostle Paul and Barnabas. And we learn in Colossians that Mark and Barnabas were cousins, and that would mean that Mary would have been the aunt of Barnabas. So you see, you have that connection. They went on this missionary journey in the 13th chapter of Acts. And then something happens. Something happens that changes everything. In the 13th verse of the 13th chapter of Acts, they were sharing the gospel. They were spreading the word. But the scripture says that Mark left them and went back home to Jerusalem. John Mark left, the son of Mary. He left, and he went home. Why? We don't know. Was Paul too demanding? Well, he could have been. He could be that way. Maybe it wasn't what he expected. Or maybe he was homesick. Maybe he had to go back home to be with Mama. We don't know what happened when John Mark got back home. But whatever it was changed the destiny of the Christian movement. When I was growing up, when I was in high school, in the football locker room, there was a sign that read, "Winners never quit. Quitters never win." John Mark was a quitter. John Mark was a failure. John Mark did not fulfill the mission. But when he got home, something happened. How did his mother deal with that? How do we deal with failure? How do we deal with mistakes? Back in the 19th century, there was a young man who was struggling in school. We don't know now, but we, looking back on it, more than likely this young man suffered with dyslexia. They didn't know what it was in the 19th century. Because his schoolmaster couldn't help him, he wrote a note, and he said, "Give this note to your mother." The young man took the note home and said, "The schoolmaster said you need to read this note." She opened the note, and he said, "What does it say?" She looked at it for a long time, and then she read, "Your son is a genius. This school is too small for him. It doesn't have enough good teachers for training him. Please teach him yourself." And from that day on, Thomas Edison was schooled by his mother. And we know that Thomas Edison became one of the greatest creative minds in our nation. There are more copyrights to this day that belong to Thomas Edison than any other single individual. Years later, long after his mother's death, Thomas Edison was going through some family papers, and he found that letter that the schoolmaster had sent home. And he opened it up, and this is what it really said. "Your son is addled," or in other words, "Your son is mentally ill. We will not allow him to come to school anymore." A mother changed his life. We don't know what Mary said to her son when he came home, but she did not say to him, "You are a quitter. You are a failure. You will never amount to anything." Somehow, through God's grace and through God's love and forgiveness, she encouraged her son. And she instilled within him the confidence that he needed, that he was still somebody. And what happened after that? Well, when the second missionary journey started, remember, Barnabas wanted to call John Mark again. Paul would not allow it. Paul said, "No, he's a quitter." And Barnabas had a sharp disagreement with Paul, and he said, "Well, he'll go with me." And so Barnabas and John Mark went off on a missionary journey. We don't know what happened, but tradition says that somewhere in that journey, Barnabas lost his life. But John Mark made his way to Rome. And we know this because in Paul's letter to Philemon that was written from Rome, he says, "Mark is here." And we also know that Peter's epistle that he wrote from Rome, he talks about Mark as being his spiritual son. And Mark went back to Jerusalem, and he wrote a gospel. He wrote a gospel, the Gospel of Mark, and he talked about Jesus calling the disciples, and he talked about all of the miracles. But how could he know that? You see, he wasn't there, but Simon Peter was. It was in that relationship with Simon Peter that went back to a home of grace, to the companionship and the hospitality that his mother had shared, that he knew Simon Peter, that the first gospel is really the gospel of Simon Peter. The only time that Mark comes into the gospel is the night that they met in the upper room. And if you go back to the gospel of Mark, he adds an interesting little postscript. Apparently, when they left the upper room, young John Mark, who was probably not even a teenager, was sent to bed. His mama said, "Son, it's time to go to bed." So he put on his bedclothes. But he snuck out. Kids don't ever do that, do they? He must have snuck out the window. He followed them into the garden. He saw what was going on. He saw the disciples were sleeping. Did he hear Jesus pray, "Not my will, but thine"? He saw the soldiers come. He saw Jesus being arrested. And then he added this. There was a young man who followed him. All he had on was his night clothes. And the soldiers tried to grab him. But he left the linen cloth. And he ran away, naked as a jaybird. That was Mark's way of saying, that was me. I was there. I saw it. We wouldn't have the Gospel of Mark. We wouldn't have the Gospel of Matthew. We wouldn't have the Gospel of Luke if it had not been for a mother who believed in her son, who had a home of grace, and who offered forgiveness, and who said, "You are somebody." God bless our mothers, each and every one.